Ladies and gentlemen, this is the About Last Night show. All right. This is our first remote show. I'm your host, Brad Williams. Adam Ray,
as always,
is here.
This is a special podcast.
It is, because this is our first one outside of the Lovitz.
Sure. Feels good.
It does. We're in the bowels of the Comedy Store, and our guest is a star on one of the best shows on television. I'm not just saying that because he's here. I love the damn show. You know him from The League on FX, Thursdays at 10:30. He plays Kevin. I'm going to butcher his last name, but
perfect.
I'm going to do my best.
This is going to be great.
I'd love to see the petrified look.
Steve Renazzisi.
You got it.
Yeah!
Don't get nervous.
Maybe,
just embrace it.
Maybe a little too much on the ZZ.
You were excited. That was more of excitement that you got most of it correct.
Because I thought I was going to get it right.
Yeah.
So I was very excited. And it's very appropriate that we're talking to you today on a Sunday when football happened. Your team is?
The Giants.
Oh, you guys pulled off one today.
We did. But we also, my theory is we stare down the barrel of what's going to be the next 10 years of RG3 just haunting us NFC East.
How good is that guy?
He is good. He's the real deal, man.
Out of like guys who've come out of college, do you think he's like in the last 10 years one of those guys? It's like, yeah, I mean.
I think you had two really special guys last year. I think you had Andrew Luck and you had RG3. And, you know, I mean, it happened 1 and 2 that way. Luck 1, RG3 2. But I think if time shows, it could have been reversed.
Yeah.
Sure. Just like Great Odin and Kevin Durant. Just like those guys.
Ryan
right?
Leaf and Peyton Manning.
Ryan Leaf. God, what is that guy doing right now other than working at Quiznos?
I think he coaches. He
got to stay involved in the game.
He was like a quarterback's coach at a high school, and then he got into prescription pills, and he got arrested.
Yeah.
And then now he's Ryan Leaf, Vicodin
spokesman. I think if I remember correctly. Now, this could be completely blasphemous, and I may have butchered the story.
How dare you speak ill of Ryan Leaf?
But I'm almost positive.
Yeah, he actually rescued a cat from a tree.
Trust me, one of your fans will listen, and they'll fact check, and then they'll start yelling at me and tweeting at me that I was wrong and to apologize.
How dare you? He works with blind kids and makes them throw their first football.
Great. Well, too bad he couldn't throw his first football in the NFL to someone on his own team.
Absolutely. Now, do you find that because you're on a show that's about fantasy football, do you find that fans are coming up to you constantly with either their stories, their questions? Are they relating you to your character Kevin in that way?
Yeah, because you know a lot about football, but I mean, I'm sure. Paul Scherer? I remember hearing some interview that he was like, "I'm not that big of a football fan," and people.
Yeah,
were.
I mean, Paul and Nick and Katie and Mark had never played fantasy football before we started doing the show. Mm-hmm. I had played in a league with my high school buddies for a couple years, and then the creators had played also. So when we started, we decided, you know, what's the best way to figure out how to you know really get the language down.
Right.
So we just decided to do a league amongst ourselves. And we've all gotten into it very, very, quickly.
It's one of those addictive things. I'm in a league myself, but it's something where it's only important to you.
Yeah. It's sort of like, that's what you were saying before about people coming up to me with stories and stuff. Hearing fantasy football, like, stories, it's sort of like listening to other people's dreams. You're like,
right.
After a while, you're like, I couldn't give a shit. Really, what you was.
You mean you don't like it when some strange guy just comes up and goes, dude, the craziest thing happened. If only I had started the Texans defense today instead of the Steelers defense, I would have won my league.
I've
you
had
not
more
entertained by this story?
With drunk 28-year-old guys than you can possibly fathom. Just Jaeger breath breathing down my throat.
And they come at you with questions like, Victor Cruz or Brandon Marshall, what should I do?
I get 30 tweets in the morning on Sunday of like a fantasy, and I literally write back the same thing to everyone. I give my suggestion, and then I say, if I'm wrong, please don't murder my family. I don't know. That's all I can tell
you. Yeah, that's about all you can ask for in that situation.
Yeah.
I tried fantasy football once last year. Like, I've done fantasy basketball a couple times, but that's even too much because it's almost every night.
Yeah.
And the draft was fun. But when I did fantasy football, everybody in it was taking it so seriously that it's not that like I wasn't taking it serious. I just wanted to kind of see what would happen if I like took a kicker in the second round. people went apeshit. And then I took, a defense pretty quick. Is that not something you're supposed to do?
No.
That was maybe I went kicker defense. I went quarterback, kicker defense. And everyone's right. like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You're messing and then to top it off, I would just forget to start players. And so then I became the guy that when you played me, it was like an easy win.
Taco.
Taco. I was about to say, he's the taco
of the
league.
But then every now and then, I would start my shit and beat somebody, and they would call me up and go, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
You're not going to play for 6 weeks?
And now you're going to start.
KT Tataro is who I'm referencing. And he's like, he's like, what are you doing, man? He's like, you're
trying this
he's
week?
He's like, I knew that I was going to get a W this week. And like a couple of his players were injured. So he was like, thank God I'm playing Adam. He doesn't fucking start anybody.
Wow, and that's what I think is so great about the show is I think just about in every fantasy football league, you can watch your show and be like, okay, so-and-so is this character, and like they're so dynamic. There's, of course, the guy in the league that everybody hates, you know, but he's still in the league.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you guys have two guys on the show like that, the Paul Scheer character and then also
the Andre character.
Yeah, Dre and Ruxin,
and then,
probably.
And Ruxin, yeah, but now this year Ruxin is now commissioner of the league. He has power, which is his main love in life, is how he has the authority over the rest of us. But, yeah, he, you know, the people ask me, do you have to know a lot about football to enjoy the show? And no. I really don't think you do.
Not at all.
We have a lot of women that come to us, and they're like, we love the show. Like, I don't like football, or I'm not a big fan of football, but my husband and I can sit down and watch it together. And I just tell them, I go, as long as you have friends that you hate, you'll be able to find something in the show that makes you laugh.
And I think we all do. I think everyone, and not just guys, girls as well, everyone has a friend that they have no idea why they're fucking friends with that person. It's just like, it's just over a long period of time, it's happened, now you can't get rid of them.
You just inherited that person.
Absolutely.
Have you, now, obviously, one of the perks of like being on it, but being on a, you know.
Guys, isn't this much better than being in Lovitz's?
It's more real. I don't know what just happened.
See, now, have to explain to your fans is that there's an element of danger as to where we are now.
Yeah,
sure.
Give a little backstory to the comment.
Right now we are, I mean, anything, the Lovitz, I've been to that booth before. It's really nice. It's in a comedy club.
Yeah.
It's in a sound booth.
Yep. Yeah.
We are in a, when you said green room, that's a very loose term. We're in a room, an office upstairs.
With a desk that looks like it went through the 94 earthquake in San Francisco.
With a desk that is at a 45-degree angle from parallel. It is an air conditioner in the window and just, I mean, probably enough.
And a giant poster of Tiny Tim on the wall.
Yeah. And we're in the middle of open mic right now. So there's like 35 homeless people downstairs. With no will to live.
Including the legendary Boom Shakalaka.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I've suggested to you, right?
Yes.
To have him on the podcast, which he goes, that sounds kind of dangerous. I go, that sounds kind of genius.
Yeah. Well, you need to have someone. Do you have anyone? I don't know what your relationship is with him.
Very, it's positive.
Okay. But, yeah. I mean, and you would be able to talk, like he would. Because he has like ADD, like he'll just stop. He'll take the microphone and then just leave.
Probably steal it, and then go sell it, and then he'll probably try to sell it to me the next week.
Did you ever hear the story about when he stole? Well, he didn't steal. He found David Taylor's iPod.
Yes,
and then tried to sell it back to David Taylor.
Yep.
You want to buy an iPod? And David Taylor's like, yes, I would like to purchase an iPod. Perhaps the one you stole out of my car.
We are talking about a actual man named Boom Shakalaka, who is a
Boone.
Boone, yeah.
Boone Shakalaka.
B-O-O-N. Yeah.
Okay, Boone Shakalaka, who is an actual open micer in L.A. Probably been doing open mic nights for what, would you say, 20 years?
Many years, yeah. I've been here 11 years. And
he's a gay black man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lot of energy.
Almost asexual, though, besides.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great big smile. His jokes consist of, I'll give you an example. What's 12 inches in white? Not a damn thing.
Yeah.
Well,
which is
always
actually a good joke.
Boone is almost like the Fraser Smith to me of homeless people.
Of homeless black comedians.
Yeah, because any dime a day I could see him on stage. I saw him at the Haha once. I don't know how he got out there. But he went up and I sat in the back and I had the biggest smile on my face and I enjoyed every moment of it. And he did crowd work and he's just, I don't know, man. I wouldn't say he's a comic.
He sells things that he gets. I don't know. That's a loose term.
Obtains
from various thrift stores.
From people like when their back's turned.
Yes. Yeah. And then he sells them back. So he'll come over. You like books? And he'll have like all these books.
Which is a great opening line.
And I'll be like, well, you know, I'm not interested in it. I'll look through the books. And he'll be like, what kind of book do you like? I'll be like, I like, give me like Howard Stern's Private Parts. Okay. 6 months later, I'm at an ATM machine at Fairfax and Crescent Heights. No, Crescent Heights and Melrose.
Right.
And all of a sudden, out of the side, oh, I found your book. And he just pops out with Howard Stern's Private Parts.
And you had to buy it.
In the hard copy. Hardcover.
Wow.
The whole thing.
That's unbelievable.
All the pages were there.
And you had to buy it at that point because you essentially asked for it.
I said, how much, Boone? He goes, give me $2. I was like, all right, I'll give you $4.
He went
Boone.
On the great.
Oh. Give me $5. I'm like, no, I'm going to give you $4. Boom.
Can you imagine the journey he went on to get that book? And then at the end of the day, a couple bucks. That's all I want.
I want
the fact that you told me you wanted it and that you're actually going to follow through and buy it from me.
He's like human Amazon.
But sometimes he'll be like, you know, you like books? And you're like, definitely. And be like, well, you want to buy some of these oil paintings? And you're like, all right, well, that doesn't.
Strange shirts and hats.
Yeah. And then, you're right now, Steve, kind of, you're living the dream. You're on a hit show. You get to go to work with your friends.
Mostly. Yeah.
Some of them.
No, I am.
And that's what I want to ask too. Is like, how many now big athletes have you met because of the show? Because obviously with the popularity,
a week and a half ago was the premiere, and we do a premiere screening and then a party with the Always Sunny guys.
Also, oh, cool!
And their show and their crew and all that. And it's been 4 years now we've been doing it, and we always have a good time. But now, since the network has acquired so many other things, more and more people are showing up at these events. So now that the network has FX has The Ultimate Fighter.
Right.
So, like, last week at the premiere, Jon Jones was there.
Nice.
And Cerrone and those guys. And, like, just to be around and get to hang out with, like, those guys.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, after the party, I went next door with John Bones Jones, and we went to some jazz club and watched Rumor Willis sing jazz. Yeah. And I was like,
that's one of those only Hollywood stories.
Deadliest human in the world. And I watching Rumor Willis sing jazz.
Now, when you're sitting next to a John Bones Jones, isn't there a small part of you that's like, I hope someone tries to fuck with me right now?
It's a crazy feeling because Cerrone was there too.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just like knowing that you have like three or four guys who, if it all went down, would just clear the room out.
I've got a Dallas Cowboys story. I did a club in Fort Worth, Texas called Hyenas. And when the show was done, I'm signing, doing pictures and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, this dude comes up behind me, picks me up, which I fucking hate. That's like my thing. I don't like being picked up. So as soon as this dude picks me up, I turn around and just immediately punch him in the face because I don't want that to happen. My watch clips his forehead. Forehead starts bleeding. It's DeMarcus Ware.
Oh, my God.
DeMarcus Ware, who is one of the most fierce guys on the Cowboys. Ridiculously large, intimidating black man has picked me up, like reenacting Lion King, like
the vineyard,
like yeah, exactly. And I hit him in the face. He starts bleeding, and he then puts me down. And then everyone else there knows exactly who he is, so they're all quiet as hell because I just punched their hero in the face.
Yeah, isn't there some sort of urban legend too of a midget slices your forehead?
Oh yeah,
like you can't sleep for a week or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you know they know their season's fucked now.
Yeah, it's over.
And then DeMarcus Ware puts me down and just goes while he's bleeding, goes, "I am so sorry." I'm like, "You goddamn right, you're sorry."
Oh my God. You cut his forehead?
I cut his forehead with my watch because I can't throw a punch.
Jesus.
So, now I'm probably gonna get
was
tweets
he just
from
wiping the blood away like a man.
Oh, like
he I would have cried. Can someone give me a pen?
He didn't even notice he's bleeding. That's just another thing for him. That's breathing to him.
Yeah. Look at my phone for my dermatologist. Can you look up Dr. Schwartzman?
Is it going to need staples or some plastic surgery? No, he doesn't give a shit. But
that's crazy.
He was really cool and really nice about it, even though I punched him in the face.
We've had great players on the show. Terrell Suggs has been on twice now.
Nice.
Is there anybody that you want? I mean, who like? Because Giants are your team, right?
Yeah.
So I mean,
well, see. I would really if I. My number one would be Peyton to be on the show. Peyton's funny. I think Peyton.
He was always one of the best athletes to host SNL.
I bought stuff just because Peyton sold it. I'm like, oh, he sold it. I bought.
So you have a Buick. A you TV. Have you have Papa John's.
I don't buy Papa John's.
Peyton Manning does Papa John's.
Yeah,
he does Papa John's.
He does everything. What's wrong? I thought it was always just Papa John's or Papa John.
Yeah, no, but Papa John's also, I think, a mild racist and supports.
He does always come
ultra,
off a little
right wing. Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, he does? I had no idea.
You haven't seen him in the commercials? No. He's always got that shit-eating grin. It's like, I'm Papa.
Yeah.
I almost feel like he wants to, he's selling like the new mushroom sausage pizza, but he kind of made me just wants to go, you know, usually I talk about the new pizza we got, but I'd like to actually talk about why there's too many blacks in my neighborhood. Yeah. Like, you feel like that's maybe.
He's got an agenda.
He
but
does.
But he's got garlic butter sauce. I would think that that would apply purely to black people. No.
I don't know. I don't know what they like now. Who likes what? I like everything. That's
why.
I don't know who likes what.
Yo, that's a great show.
I ate Indian food. I never would have thought in my life 5 years ago I would have. I love Indian food now.
You just tried it?
I just tried it.
How long ago?
There you go. Like 3 years ago. Jesus. No, I love it.
It's great. What,
yeah, I never had sushi before I moved here.
I never. Well, yeah, me neither.
I'm from the East Coast. We don't really. We never. I mean, not.
Sushi's not a New York thing. Well,
not where I grew up. No.
And you grew up in Seattle, Adam.
Yeah.
You didn't have sushi up there?
Well, I mean, I was just, seafood was everywhere, and I didn't really get into it until I left. Because I think it was just too much. Same thing with coffee, you know? It was around you so much that you were just like, all right.
I've never had a cup of coffee in my life.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope.
Wow.
I'm not a fan of hot liquids. I'm not. Fill in the blank.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Easy joke. No, how do you, because here's why, when I was working at Universal Studios, which was my first job out here in college, and I was a tour guy on the Backlot tour,
he's real successful.
Uh-huh. and you had to do, you know, 4 or 5 hour-long shows a day, and so much movie facts, plenty that I made up because there was a lot of Japanese tourists that I could be like, hey, those bushes were in Bushes 1 and Bushes 2, Attack of the Bushes. You might remember that scene when Al Pacino was like, oh, that's a lot of bushes. Snap, snap, snap. Memory that's not real.
Yep.
Now, I would go in sometimes 9 a.m. to give these tours, and I was in college. I was living in my frat during that summer, and I would get really high or drunk nights before and go in, and I was like, man, how am I going to give these tours? And I didn't drink coffee, and there was no Red Bull this one day, so finally I drank coffee to wake up, and that was like the start of it. Because up until that point, the taste, I hated it.
Now it's over. Now you've been late to gigs because you couldn't have coffee.
I drank a Frappuccino one time and I thought I almost crapped my pants. I think the first they should
well,
give it
that
if you never have coffee in your life,
when you first
you have it as an adult, another adult should be like, hey, by the way, you know you're going to shit profusely, right? When you have this coffee,
you know you have no control over when.
Yeah, like you're gonna be like,
right?
Oh, I think I have to. Oh, I've already. Oh, it's out. It's all. More's coming out. And there
you
it
really
is. It's
think
all
about the fact.
You're like, oh, I have to. Oh, it's out. That's how badly I crapped the first Frappuccino I ever drank.
And that's probably a big deterrent into why you didn't drink coffee ever again.
Yeah, I was like, ah, I'm good.
Shit your pants one time, you're like, not really a fan of this.
It's really powerful stuff. I understand why people, and it really gives you a lot of energy.
So you just try to get a decent amount of sleep.
I just wake up.
And trust that you'll have the energy.
I don't know, yeah. I drink orange juice. Does it? Anyone drink orange? I drink like a half a glass of orange
7?
Juice.
Well, is that really?
I'm like a 68-year-old dad on a sitcom in the 50s.
You know what was weird, though? You said you drink orange juice as if it was like something we needed to kind of announce. Like as if I'm still...
Eartha, get me a glass of orange juice. No pulp, please.
Well, because I was going to say, like you have a kid, two kids now?
I have two kids.
And you just had a new one.
You have two children, so and you're not a coffee drinker, and some parents are listening right now going,
my wife
the hell
can't function
be.
Without
I was just gonna
a cup
say,
of coffee.
Okay, yeah.
There you go.
So that's why she does all the work. I wake up when I need to wake up. That's how daddy stays rested.
Good.
No,
good,
no. That's
good
not,
comedian husband.
I'm up.
No, you're a great dad.
I get up. This is crazy. The woman on the show that plays my wife, Katie Azleton, is married in real life to the guy that plays Pete, Mark Duplass.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So they have a daughter that's right around my older son's age.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had our second kids in May this year, 1 week apart.
Wow.
Yeah. My wife and I had our baby, and they had their second baby. So, and also our creators had a baby in the off season. So we just had a lot of baby things happening.
You have
that
like,
you
have like your own version of the Bizarro Steve family.
Yeah. So that's my
on.
And that which makes why the show I think works is that our interaction, Katie and I, comes from a place. We know who these people are. We know how to argue with significant others and how to
sure.
make it real. Like we just say what we would say to our husbands or wives.
You guys get to improvise.
Yeah, a lot.
That's so awesome, right? That's
I mean the show is not. It's not. Completely improvised. There's a very detailed structure and outline, but there's no really lines in an order in that type of script format. It's more of a free form.
You guys do a lot of times where you're just like all sitting at the bar insulting each other. And and as a comic, I look at that going, I hope that they're improvising.
Ideal situation.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of cool phrases that are written into the outlines, but then there's some things that we just come up with or tangents we go off of from stuff that happens in the middle of the scene that makes it, you know, it makes it seem as, I think, as a viewer, you're like, oh, that's very organic the way they talk to each other. I talk to my friends like that. They, you know, I understand how what the relationship is now.
Don't you find, too, that when you're able to improvise, it allows you to kind of flesh out more and hone in more on your character? And, like, just you can come up with things in a conversation that you may be, oh, I guess my guy also.
Because sometimes as a comedian, your initial thing is to go to joke mode, which is good and bad. It's good on our show because we have so many great comedians on the show that will come up with jokes and we'll figure out, hey, that might not necessarily be good for me, but this is something perfect that I think might, and then, you know, we just kind of lob them back and forth to each other.
Totally.
That's great. And one thing I love about it is, and I'm sure as comics, we've all encountered this in the business where you have comedians and you have executives that were never funny a day in their lives coming up to them saying, you know what I think would be funny is if you did that.
Yeah.
And it seems like in your guys' show, you have four very funny comedians and more funny comedic actors, and you guys are doing it. Mm-hmm. They gave you the outline. They kind of give you the signpost to hit, but they're allowing you.
Yeah,
to
we don't
make
have
funny.
Any network problems or notes or anything like that.
Oh,
they let us
great.
Go. Where we God. Just hand in a DVD,
and that's why the show is great. Don't you? When I hear these stories of like a show that didn't make it or got pulled too early, it's because I feel like it's always higher-ups that are coming in trying to
FX
justify
is great
their
because,
job.
Yeah, that's what – I mean, what they do is they go, we are good at – we own a television format.
Mm-hmm.
We have some creative people that we think are good at finding talent and developing them. And then once they do that, they kind of leave you alone. They go, all right, now you do your job. We'll do our job of marketing it, a well-made show for not a lot of money. I mean, we don't shoot a lot of the shows on FX don't cost a lot, especially the comedies don't cost a lot of money to make. We make them for pretty cheap, but that's the reason we get that power if they leave us alone. Because it's not a lot of money. It's a lot of money for them to risk if you hear the number, but in the grand scheme of what these guys are willing to take risks on, what we make our show for is a big bonus for them.
Is it higher than $50?
It's a little bit higher than $50.
And you get free food.
We get free food.
Woohoo! Do you get handy snacks?
We get we have a pretty good craft service table.
Right. It's a yes or no question, Steve.
You get I try to stay away from it. I could easily gain 8 pounds, 10 pounds in a week if I just roam past that craft service table like a dinosaur.
Some of them are unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, for those who are listening who are not in show business, craft service is just this table of food that
it's
they will
always
have
out.
At every show, every taping, every live performance.
And it's mostly, it's supposed to be for the hard-working crew that's moving big things around,
no,
and lighting
it's
and
the
climbing.
It's the actors who are looking
it's
to kill time.
Yeah,
and down a fruit by the foot.
Going, I'm a comic, I'm never going to have to be good-looking. Where are the yo-yos? Give me those delicious yodels.
What's that? Cheeseburger washed down by Yoo-Hoo? Check, please.
Chicken fingers at 11 a.m.? Thank you.
Sounds great. And then they'll have, like, a chef oftentimes.
Oh.
And that's just cooking stuff up.
Yeah, right. He's like, what do you want? What do you want, a donut and a pizza and an ice cream and a Pop-Tart? You're like, I mean, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What time is it? Oh, it's 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, perfect.
We both worked at the Comedy Store. We both worked on Punk'd. We both have a killer jump shot.
That's
right. And we both lost our virginity to Susu Studio. Now, I'd like to start with the second one. I'd like to start with the second one.
I'm feeling like the outcast in the group.
Susu Studio?
Susu? Wait, I thought it's Susu.
Susu.
Yeah, because I lost my virginity to In the Air Tonight, so I'm just feeling like the outcast.
Did you really?
Everyone on this podcast has lost their virginity to
Phil Collins. I came right at the drum solo.
What a glorious
climax. Can't beat it. Thanks, Crystal.
Crystal?
What donut shop did you bang Crystal at?
Speaking of Dixie Chicks, I was driving past the Hollywood Bowl last night, and the Brad Paisley concert was getting let out.
Oh, yeah. Drove by.
Oh, my God.
Some of the ladies?
Woo! Yeah, they love Brad Paisley. Why do they love him so much? Is he like a hot thing?
I think he's a good-looking dude.
There were tens galore walking down the street in like Daisy Dukes.
Oh God, all dressed in the country attire.
Yeah, they loved it.
The hats, the boots, the jean shorts.
Beautiful. Yeah. I was stuck in traffic, but that just made
best traffic jam of your life.
Yeah, just prancing down.
Fuck.
Highland.
There's a handful of artists. We're back up. There's a handful of artists that attract just the hottest women on the planet.
Country.
Dave Matthews as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been to a Dave Matthews concert in probably 12 years, but it was quality back then.
Yeah. Still quality.
You were talking about the Hollywood Bowl. The last concert I was there at was
The Wiggles. And that was a good show.
Wiggles. It was great.
And
it's fantastic.
I got backstage.
Finally. Not going to tell you how I got there, but just let's say I earned that pass. But I went to Motley Crue, and incredible show, but the talent in the audience was not nothing like Brad
Paisley.
Who's
going to a Motley Crue show?
People that saw Motley Crue back in the 80s.
Yeah. That show would be great if you guys all got there and then got into a DeLorean and went 88 miles an hour back in 1985. That show would be off the hook.
I saw Clapton at the Bowl, and that had better talent than Motley Crue.
I feel like
Motley
that's going to be a great show.
I've never seen a show at the Hollywood Bowl.
Jesus.
Never.
Have you seen?
I've been to the Greek.
Great. Okay. Bowl's better. Greek's great. Yeah,
Mumford & Sons is at the Bowl in a couple of weeks.
Are they really?
Yeah.
There
they have
you
two
go.
Sold-out shows.
Sure
I want to go see
go
one,
that.
I think.
I'll probably get some hot ladies, too, because
definitely.
Women love the banjo.
Women love banjo.
And that guy's married to Carey Mulligan now.
Really?
The lead singer, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
John Mayer's dating Katy Perry.
I know.
I need a fucking guitar.
I was literally reading this article because somebody left the magazine at the gym. I'm not buying Us Weeklies. I just want to say that here right now. And here's why. Let me just say this real quick, because I don't like to support some of the bullshit that gets put out there. Because I feel like there's so much that the line is blurred between what's real and what's not, that I'll literally be standing in line at the grocery store and see a picture of Oprah on like Inquirer making a really unattractive face. And the headline says, like, Oprah hospitalized after giving birth to 8,000-pound pig baby. And obviously, I'm like, well, that's bullshit. But a little piece of me goes, oh, I hope she's okay.
Yeah.
because there's just so much of it. You're like, oh, I guess it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I read that article. And she goes, Katy Perry goes, I want to change him. I'm playing hard to get. She's like, he's up to his old, like,
oh, pobrecito.
You know. She's like, so I called him and I didn't call him back for a few days and like, and, you know, fucking whatever, dude.
What she doesn't realize is when she's not calling him back for 3 days, he's banging like
you think
20
cares?
Other girls on an assembly line.
Maybe.
Yeah. I would hope so. I hope John Mayer's banging that many chicks.
And this concludes the part of the podcast we like to call Who's John Mayer Fucking? Steve, thanks
for
coming
by. I knew
we
had a segment, guys. I knew it.
What? Yeah,
if you listen to the podcast, you would talk about
it
every week.
Yes, I didn't realize we had the John
Mayer. It's usually called What's John Mayer's Dick Been Up To?
How's John Mayer's dick smell this week?
Exactly.
What celebrity does it smell
this
like?
This week, it smells like a firework.
Let me get back to
Katy Perry reference.
Nicely
woo-hoo!
Done.
Now, when you came out here in 2000?
2001.
Isn't there some crazy story with you coming out right after 9/11?
Yeah, I moved out after 9/11. I was going to move out anyway, but I moved out after. And my wife and I moved out in November. We were in the process of moving anyway. So this just happened to be, we both got unemployment for a very, very long time, which was nice. It made things easier to get out here. And we got laid off from work, so it made life when we got here a little bit easier. But we had, like, like you said before, shitty jobs.
What were you doing?
I worked here. I would work here.
No, I mean in New York.
Oh, New York. I was just doing, like, account management and stuff like that. Like, just being able to talk to people.
So acting and comedy wasn't even...
No, I did.
You went to theater school.
I went to school for theater.
Me too. How'd that work out? It's good, right?
Yeah, I mean...
You had to... I mean... It kept you in it, four
it
years of that.
It gave me experience that I didn't have before.
Totally.
Of actually just getting on stage and seeing if I enjoyed or was good at it.
Yep. So you didn't do plays as a kid before that?
Not really. I did like three in high school. And then
you quit football to play Danny Zuko in Grease?
No.
Oh, no, that was me.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, dude. But guess what? That's when I realized.
On purpose? Like because you were like, it's either one or the other?
I was, basketball's
like
always been
Glee?
My sport.
Yep.
Wow.
Somebody else just told me, they were like, oh, like Glee, because I'd never seen the show. Or they
I don't
go,
know. I just know there's a football guy. I'm sure at some point he quit something.
Of course.
Something
no, I was always. I was playing football. I got like pretty big, and I was lifting a lot, and I whatever. And
easy guy. All right, relax.
You know what? When I go back and watch the tape, I see the
which
potential.
I'm sure you do every Friday before you cry and exit your house.
Look at the stadium. That could have been me. Right?
You try to make strangers laugh. Hey man, it's gonna be okay.
I never wanted to play football professionally, but I was playing because all my buddies were playing, and the coach was like, "Hey, the offensive line guy who's a senior is injured. You're gonna start varsity as a sophomore." And I was like, "Oh, cool. I don't really give a shit. I'm just playing. It's fun." And then the guy who did the plays was like, "Hey, we're gonna do Grease in the fall, I think you should audition because I think you'd be a great Danny Zuko." And the plays were a big deal in our community, and I was like, "Oh fuck, that seems like more fun." So I went to the office of the coach and told him, and I go, "Hey," and I try to make a joke out of it. I go, "I don't think I'm going to be able to play this year because this is a week after he told me I'm going to start varsity." I go, I can't memorize the playbook because I try to memorize the lines to Grease Lightning. And he just stares at me and goes, "Get the fuck out of here." And I go, "Cool, thanks, coach." And then he came with his kids on the last day. And then he coached basketball, and he would give me shit all season being like, "Sorry, I don't have a script for this play, Adam Ray, you fucking idiot. Hey, Zuko." You fucking
I quit sports as well to do drama in high school. I was on the I was on the wrestling team.
Wow.
Yeah, and then
what play did you quit it for? Because that's the
This is gonna sound so drama nerdy. It was something called Commedia dell'arte, which is some Italian thing. And I played a character named Arlecchino.
Is it a drama?
Yeah.
Or is it a comedy?
What's that?
Was the play a drama or a comedy?
Comedy.
Commedia dell'arte.
Yeah. Commedia dell'arte.
Oh. Comedy of the arts?
I don't know. Bro, I didn't pay attention.
He's in the moment, man.
Hey, man. They gave me a script. I read it.
No, but
one time I went on an audition for a pilot out here, and pilot season is crazy because you got to go on so many a day, and it just becomes nuts.
Sure.
You get so many scripts. So my agency sent me the script. I didn't have really time to look at it, and I went to the audition. And I did it. And before I'd gone in, the casting director has been, yes, NBC asked for you specifically. They're interested in seeing you on this. So I was like, all right, great. So I read it, and I could see her as I'm reading it, like craning her neck from behind the camera, like, what the fuck is going on here? She was done. Shit. When I was done, she was like, do you want to try that again? And I was like, well, yeah. I mean,
that's always a good sign.
Like, yeah, I'm like, well, I didn't really see many jokes in it. It really doesn't read very funny at all. She's like, I thought it was a half-hour sitcom. It was an hour drama.
Oh, my God.
They had given me the wrong cover sheet, so I didn't I just had the sides.
Yeah.
I thought it said half-hour sitcom, NBC, blah, blah, blah. And I was just so it was like, she killed three girls. What? Who gives a shit? Like that. I was reading it like that, and I was way off the mark.
Yeah, you were the talk of that office for at least a month.
Yeah, but I didn't know. I showed her the sheet. Sure. She's like, "Oh yeah, you have to. You can't.
You got to make some changes.
You can't put this on tape. You've got to come back when you're ready."
Well, yeah. It's nice they at least let you do that.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's funny.
Okay, so then, all right. So you theater school, and then that got you enough experience to go, all right, I think I want to kind of do this.
Well, I was in New York, and I went to see. And this is going to sound like a dig, but I went to see Jay Moore at Caroline's, and because I was a big fan of Opie and Anthony, and he was on all the time. So I went to see Jay Moore at Caroline's, and I was like, oh, I like that. I think that that's something I would be interested in trying. And because I always, I enjoyed doing comedies in college. And then my wife signed me up for an open mic and didn't tell me. She was my girlfriend at the time. Signed me up for an open mic, didn't tell me, went on stage, did 3 minutes. Don't really remember it. Didn't remember it going fine.
Did you prepare at all? Or
a little
just
bit. I had always, like when you realize you think you might want to do comedy, I think you just carry around like in your wallet like 3 minutes of material. You're like, in case at any point I have to actually do this because I said I wanted to do it so many times, I have to have it ready to go. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And then the guy was like, that was okay. Do you want to try 6 minutes in like 2 weeks? And I was like, I'm like, I don't really have any more. Like, just do that again and just make it, I didn't know you could do the same material again. I had no idea. I wasn't a big fan of like
rules.
Stand-up growing up.
Right.
But
there was no comedian that you were like, oh, that.
I remember watching Cosby himself when I was a kid with my parents and laughing.
All right, but it didn't hit
but
you.
But it wasn't like a thing where I was like a student of it growing up. And so I had done comedy probably about 50 times in my life before I moved here. And that's why I kind of consider getting my job here at the Comedy Store like my beginning at stand-up.
That's exactly how I did it.
Because I even when I got here, my first open mic, I signed up, which is crazy because it's on the same night. It's Sunday night. I signed up, and this guy, Ari Shaffir, was the host. And I did 3 minutes in front of nobody.
Right.
Not one human being you know,
People not from L.A. think like, oh, you just go up on stage and there's packed houses. No, you do open mic nights in front of other comics, maybe.
Yeah.
In front of
no one.
Homeless people or just, yeah, no one.
And then Ari ripped me, just tore me apart for about a minute. And then brought the next loser on.
And how many times have you done it before that? So you just thought...
And this material had worked because basically every time in New York I'd brought like 10 people and I was like, oh, this is going to also work always.
Because they were... Because
you're supportive of friends. When they come to the Bringer shows, they'll give you... I mean, they're still not going to laugh.
There's a benefit of the doubt, though.
Yeah.
That they give you a little leeway.
They'll still be somewhat fair if you're like... I mean, if you're like super dirty, you're talking about something that's really personal and they know you and you're like, oh, wow, you've never talked about anal sex in our like conversations as friends, but now you're doing it on stage and we're still here and it's like, you know...
And then Ari rips me.
What did he say to you? Do you remember?
Oh, he was... I think I did like a bit about the gym and showering at the gym. Mm-hmm. You know, which everybody does.
Sure did one of those.
Because when you're in New York, you're a professional. You worked, and sometimes you can get your gym in the lunch, and then you would shower at the gym. It is a thing in New York. Here, it's not a thing because no one has any work to actually go back to. So when they go to the gym, that's their day. And then they go home and shower. So Ari says, he's like, no, by the way, nobody ever showers at the gym anymore. Okay, so you live here now. So understand that. That joke's not going to work anymore.
That's actually a really good Ari Shaffir.
Yeah, great Ari Shaffir. I've never heard an Ari Shaffir. Wow.
I've been with Ari for years. I've been friends with Ari for... He was one of my first friends here.
Yeah.
Especially at the Comedy Store,
Isn't that crazy?
He ripped me. And then when I got the job here is when I really... You know, every Tuesday or Sunday, Monday, sometimes Tuesday they had open mic. And then and it was just... I would take 3 minutes apart every week and just keep going at it and at it and at it. Then I was like, material stinks, so I just started doing crowd work. I'm like, I have to learn how to talk to people. So I just did a whole month of crowd work.
That's the only thing Tommy harps on, right? Is what they are forcing
Tommy, the manager of the Comedy Store.
To connect with the audience, and you feel like through that you start to maybe hone in on your voice a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what I thought was funnier, the way my mind worked, you know?
So how many Sunday and Mondays did you go to before you started maybe getting like better spots that were...
Oof. Years.
Right?
Wow.
Years.
Yeah,
years.
Starting out here is, really difficult.
Yeah.
I did the same thing where I did maybe 5 open mics in Seattle, moved on here to go to college in 2001, didn't do it again until 2007, and then it was Bringer shows here twice a month, and then for almost maybe probably the first 2 years, and then I was like, wow, I probably need to do this more to get better.
Yeah.
And I think I was always scared of, because I knew what it took, the commitment level, and I was in a relationship, and I was like, I don't want to be giving up every night to do this. And then finally I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to. And then other things out of my life had to be, you know, had to start cutting out. And
It's not that hard to be the funniest guy in Des Moines. When you're trying to be the funniest guy in L.A., you have all this sort of competition. Now, were you going out on auditions constantly? Or
commercials.
Commercials.
Well, that was 2001 I got the job here. Mm-hmm. And then 2003 I got punked. Which kind of opened a couple doors.
Wow, that's like 2 years in. That's pretty great.
Yeah, that was a good job. It wasn't as much recognition as it just was. You
that's
had
some
something to
too,
show
right?
people.
Yeah.
Like they were like, what has he been on? You know, like casting. What has he been on? Punk.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard of that. Okay, let's bring him in.
Yeah, because
just let me get in the door.
Totally.
Sure.
And then I was able to go on pilot auditions from there.
It really does help to have like a little bit of buzz and some sort of credit because like, when I graduated SC, I'd go into a room and they were like, oh, so what have you done? I was like, well, I did this play called Vinegar Tom last spring.
Yeah.
Like, who were you? Oh, I was a witch hunter. Well, that doesn't fucking matter. You want to just leave right now?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So
it's tough.
So punk then parlayed into other opportunities.
I did a couple pilots and then 2006 I did the show called Big Day, which, nobody watched, but I thought it was sort of funny.
It was
and
you were funny.
Yeah, it was a good show. And then after that, that got canceled after 13 episodes. And then Mall Cop was kind of the
the legendary Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Yeah, the Mall Cop was
fucking great in that.
Was good. That was
what was the dude's name? He was in Wedding Crashers. He played
Keir.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bad guy.
Cuz Jeannie cast it. Yeah, I think Jeannie. That's how I
Jeannie's hired me you. Many made. She's yeah. one that was, of the only people that's ever hired me.
That was one of the biggest Oscar snubs in history, by the way, that you get nominated for Blart Mall Cop.
We knew what we were doing when we were there, but we had no idea it was going to do as well. I mean, that movie opened on the perfect weekend. It was a three-day Martin Luther King holiday weekend, up against nothing in January, and it just came out like gangbusters. And I think it cost like $25 million to make, and Jesus. I think it made like $180.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yo,
bring this ensuring that we would have such quality follow-ups as Here Comes the Boom.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, and the Zookeeper.
Right.
Jesus. I know. Are those, how do you – would you do – if somebody came to you – because how much do you think he got for that?
For what?
For Zookeeper.
Paul, Kevin?
Yeah.
Kevin James.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
15 mil?
Maybe.
Something.
Would you do a movie like that? You have kids, right? I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Like, hey, Steve, you're going to do a movie where you and a giraffe named Babu –
enter a horse racing competition and
I mean, if it was just for like, if it was horrible and there was no chance of it being good, like,
it can't be a student film where a guy's like, you know, I'm gonna
I would hope that you would try to make a good movie. That's mm-hmm. Or a good, even if I guess
basically what I'm
movie.
Asking is, will you do my movie? Will you commit to it right now?
Wait, are you pitching me an actual idea?
All right, it's you and a giraffe, he's gay, and you guys are roommates. And
that's the twist.
Yeah. But then you find out he's got a wife who you meet and fall in love with.
Oh, wow.
And get this. She's a bear.
Somewhere Adam Sandler is listening to this podcast going, I think I can make that into a movie. That was a terrible Adam Sandler.
Yeah, it was a good try.
By the way, I'm known for my terrible impressions. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I can't do
He can do a good
anybody.
Irish, like, I just found a pot of gold.
Well, because that's like every midget audition. Like, you just show up.
I was going to ask you, what are your auditions like?
The same 12 guys in every room.
Like, what do you guys just draw numbers when you get in there?
Yeah. Like,
whose turn is it?
Yeah, exactly.
We talked about this last week, and said about commercials, because it was like, you know, why the fuck aren't there more dwarves in commercial? Like, in a bank commercial for Chase Bank. Like, you see all the people, there's like, you know, Chase Bank.
Yeah.
Like, we've got all your bank needs, blah, blah, blah. You see the montage of people coming in, the black guy signing the thing, being like, mm-hmm. Oh, thank you very much. A white guy, everyone's standing in line, everyone's happy. Why not have Brad coming in there, standing in line? Then he gets up to the, the counter, and he's mm-hmm. jumping up, right? And then he's got a bag of coins, right? And he's just jumping up and, like, add a little humor to it. But also, why can't he be in there and just add to the demographic?
Why can't he just be a regular customer? I go to banks.
At McDonald's, there's always like a white guy, Asian guy, black guy being like, man, this Egg McMuffin's good. And it's only, 150 calories. Why can't fucking he say that?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I eat Egg McMuffins. And by the way, how big and delicious are those Chicken McNuggets going to look in my tiny ass hands?
Seriously.
Do you go out on commercials or stuff that like that aren't required for...
I have, and when I do, they just look at me like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah. Hey, man.
Like, there's
hey,
man.
Hey, dude, you're not selling Subway.
Yeah, there's no funny costumes here. What are you doing?
Yeah, so, come on.
It's one of those things. I had a question. Now, when you got the league script, did you get it initially? Did your manager just call you and say, hey, you're auditioning for this?
I auditioned for it. Jeannie, actually, you were the one that told me about it.
Yeah.
Like, two years before I did.
That's right.
Before he goes, Jeannie's going to bring you in on something I think you're going to be right for. It's unscripted show about fantasy football. Then I didn't hear any. You said it was at HBO, which originally was at HBO.
Yeah,
show.
Oh, wow.
Then,
by the way, I was super stoked to have any sort of talking point to talk to you about. Because, as a young comic, you're like, you look up to all these guys. And you're like, fuck, man, you see them around. And it's a lot of like, hey, what's up, man? Hey, what's up? But I'm working in a casting office and hearing them rave. So I was like, oh, cool. I got this little piece of information back. Hey, Steve,
hey, man.
Man.
There's a little nugget for
you. What's up?
There you go.
And then immediately just like, oh, cool, man. Yeah. And just to like, legitimize yourself a minute.
I'm in.
It was, you let me know about that. And then I got the audition, went in.
So where's my cup, motherfucker?
Hey, man. What is this, Shakedown?
What's his guest spot?
They read me for Ruxin.
Okay.
And I know they'd already met with certain people that they were interested in roles for, but they read me for Ruxin, and then I read, and then I left, and Jeannie ran out to the parking lot and said, they want to read you for another role. Mm-hmm. They want to read you for Pete. So I went back in, read for Pete. And then when I came out, about 2 weeks later, they said, they really want you to read for Kevin because the Pete that they have mm-hmm. is married. The person they have, they basically they had Mark playing Kevin,
gotcha, right,
and me playing Pete. And I don't think Mark and Katie, they talked about it. I didn't think they wanted to play
an actual married
wife,
couple, yeah,
in both real life and right, on screen. So we talked about it, and I went in and did a chemistry read with Katie, and it worked out well. And that's how it kind of all landed. I first turned it down. After they offered me the role, after I did the chemistry test, I didn't turn it down, but I was on the fence because I was up for the movie Going the Distance.
Oof. Mm.
And was that the movie? Yeah, Going the Distance.
Which part?
The Sudeikis role.
Nice. It would have been great.
And Jason wasn't sure if he was going to do it, and then he wasn't going to do it, then they were going to go to me. And so I was kind of holding off the league, trying
crazy,
to wait.
Man.
And I'm really out. Glad things happened the way
no
they did.
No shit, right?
Otherwise, I think you would have been looking at Jerry O'Connell. Who was not that. Yeah, I
which is fine, man, because I'm a big fan of Joe's Apartment.
Hey, you know, if it's good enough to be inside of Rebecca Romijn, it's good enough.
It's good enough to be on the About Last Night podcast. There's so many stories like that where one guy didn't get the. I mean, you know, even at the giant A-list level, where it's like, oh, you know, Jodie Foster couldn't do. A League of Their Own. So Gina Davis got it. Or, you know, Gary Busey couldn't play, the fat kid in Sandlot. So the kid from, who's the red Disney kid, the red-haired kid, the fat kid with freckles?
I don't know his name, but he's been in a couple terrible movies and all that since then.
We'll look it up later.
Yeah, I don't know.
IMDb.
That's how it works. You never know, who turns down who it falls to.
When you read the script, were you like, hey, this is
I was like,
good.
Oh, this is something I'm into. Okay. For sure, I was excited about the possibility. And plus, I was, I knew Nick a little bit through other auditions, Nick Kroll.
Mm-hmm.
And once they started telling me the other people that they were pretty much locking into place, I was like, okay, this is something I want to be a part of.
You know what's crazy is I was up for the role of Kevin. I don't know if you know that.
Every now and then, Tony Danza completely.
Here's the thing. I went in
us.
For the show probably 2 years before it even hit the air because, I hear about I'm kind of an insider. I hear about all the scripts before.
Sure.
As they're getting developed. And they said, Tony, the guy's he loves football. I said, can he be a boxer? Because I used to box back in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at this gym, Jerry's Gym, right down the corner from Balducci's, a great little sub shop. So anyway, so I said, can he be a boxer? And can his dad have been a garbage man? And they said, well, Tony, that's kind of your life. And I was like, and can it be called The Life and Times of Tony Danza?
Well, that
and they
seems
said,
like
well, it's an ensemble show. It's about fantasy football. And I said, you know what? You can suck my dick.
Oh,
and that's
Jesus,
where
Tony,
that's where things kind of went downhill.
Yeah, well, you know.
But then I got the Tony Danza show, the talk show, and hey, just like you said, things happened for a reason.
Because
then
that
got canceled after a year and a half.
That worked out.
And it worked out great. Well, the thing is I did too much singing and dancing, not enough conversation with the guests.
And you're so good at it.
Well, my monologues were basically, they weren't even monologues, Steve. I got to be honest. I'd come out there, I'd just bring up topics and move on. Like I'd show a picture of Julie Roberts having twins on a magazine and go, oh, Julie Roberts has twins. Oh, that's exciting. That's probably going to be tough to tell them apart. What else is going on? Oh, the Yankees didn't make the playoffs.
Wow.
Which the Yankees, it sucks they didn't make the playoffs because I really like those uniforms. Anyway, so those
that
would
was
be my
the
jokes.
Material.
Those are the, yeah, you need a new writers there, Tony.
Well, I'm hoping for a second break. Maybe Taxi 2. Maybe Who's the Boss Again? Who's the Boss Again?
Who's also the boss?
Who's also the boss?
I think there needs to be a follow up there. I don't think that story's been told enough.
Would you now you do the road a lot, yeah?
Yes. Yes. Well, not a lot compared to a lot of other comedians, but enough for me.
How much were you doing it prior to the league, and then has it jumped up obviously since the show came out?
I never really went out on the road while I was still like even doing movies and stuff. I wasn't out there a lot. I was still kind of building up my hour. And then once I had a reason to go out, I didn't want to just go out and make not a lot of money and be out every weekend and not be able to be in town and audition.
Right,
so then once I had a reason to go out, once I had a reason to go out, it was I try to do it twice a month, try to keep it twice a month. Sometimes I do 3 weeks a month.
It's a tough balance, right? Like you said, like trying to be in town for auditions, but if you're sole income is the road, and guys mm-hmm. who are doing it every weekend,
sure,
and they have to, they can't cancel a weekend, but then an audition comes up, and it's like, the one opportunity to be on a show, do I cancel a whole weekend?
It gets tough.
And you guys are currently filming right now, right?
We're 3/4 of the way done with the season.
Okay, because you see, like you watch the episodes, and you guys try to stay current.
Yep.
With what's going on in the NFL, you guys are kind of like. You guys are kind of like HBO 24/7.
Try.
Yeah. Like
it's tough.
Yeah, I mean,
we did guess big time this year. Ogletree. That was a whole when Paul Shear said we shot that before the first week of the season. We just were like, all right, who do you think could have a good week that surprised that week? And we were like, oh, Ogletree. It's like, another touchdown. And then Ogletree scored three touchdowns. Remember that first week?
I do.
He scored like two or three touchdowns.
Yeah, then
it was just a guess.
And then everyone picked him up off the waiver wire, and then he didn't
Everybody,
do shit the rest of the year.
Including me. Including me. I've been duped by Ogletree.
Now, so, like, do people, because in your own personal league, do people just assume, well, he's the expert, or do they talk extra shit to you?
Well, my next-door neighbor, I'm in a league with him, and he... I told him, you know, he just assumed I was good, but I'm 0-5 in that league. And I just get so much shit from those guys because they're like, what a douche. This guy's what a crappy L.A. actor. That's all he is.
Do you find yourself getting, like, really emotionally invested in the games that you're – I mean, because how big of a fan were you before fantasy football?
I love football. I watch football, pro football. I'm not a huge college fan just because in New York growing up, you don't have a real big team. It's not like – Penn State or Illinois.
NYU doesn't have a team.
It's a lot of Irish Catholics, so there's a lot of rooting for Notre Dame.
It's like Syracuse and Rutgers.
Connecticut now is pretty decent, so, you know, but they've been, you know, just fairly recently. So growing up, I didn't have a huge college team to root for, so I just was a big Giants fan.
Because that was always a piece of my not wanting to get into fantasy football because, you know, getting invested in your own team is – takes a lot out of you. And then I was like, all right, so now I'm going to care about all these other teams connection
to. It's helped the NFL, though, as a whole.
Sure, because now people watch every game. They have something invested in every game.
Like a buddy of mine, I picked him up to go to a show a couple weeks ago, and he gets in the car. He's in three leagues, and he gets in the car super, like, just as I have not seen him as depressed and down in a long time. He gets in the car, and he's like, what's up, man? And I was like, what's up? What's going on? He goes, I don't want to talk about it. And I was like, dude, are you like, you're usually not like this. Like, is something happening with your family? Because I know your dad was going through some shit. And I was like, I lost in two of my leagues today. And I literally just started laughing really hard. Because what the fuck, dude? I got to that point to where the sympathy level was
a lot to people.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, I thought like somebody died in your family or some really shit. And then he started laughing. He was like, I know. He's like, I know it's stupid. He's like, but fuck. And then he just started going off.
Yeah.
Fucking so, Drew Brees. I guess you got to space out how invested you get into it, right?
You take the good with the bad. Yeah. It's a game with a weirdly shaped ball.
The support we give them and how much... What percentage of athletes do you say really give a shit about us? And I'm not talking about fans in general. I'm talking about us three in this room right now.
Oh, us?
Oh, well, I'd say
including
like...
me or without me?
How much does LeBron James care about Brad Williams, Adam Ray, and Steve Ranis?
0%.
Wow. Well,
there you go.
Guess who's not coming on the podcast? LeBron James.
You told him.
Yeah, we're not having him.
Hey, if you're listening, I didn't mean that. You're definitely welcome. So... That's not true. I just want a basketball team back in Seattle. That's all I want. If you're listening, LeBron...
What is he going to do? buy a basketball team and bring it to Seattle?
Jesus, man.
No. You guys just got the arena, though.
Yeah, we got the arena approved.
There you go.
So who's going to go over there?
Probably the Kings. I'll take them. So at this point, I'll take the Marcus
Seattle
Cousins.
Kings?
No, the Seattle Sonics, baby. We keep the name.
Oh, you keep
Oklahoma
the name.
Oklahoma took the history, which is fucking ridiculous. Yeah. And the banners? What? You didn't earn those.
they did. They
took
the
Seattle Storms banners, all right?
That's nice. Title IX.
People all the time. Dude, it sucks. You lost the songs. Dude, is it really that? But you still got the Storm, and they've won two WNBA championships.
Hey, now.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But you got stake in the Storm? You got a little defensive there.
No. I can't watch the WNBA. I just can't. I'm sorry.
What? But like one girl dunked one time last year.
They all are great. They could all beat me, I'm sure.
Up.
I just have no... And that
game the other night was so exciting because the coach took off her jacket. SportsCenter covered that shit for like half an hour.
Yeah. Did what with it?
Some coach got mad and she took off her jacket and threw it at an assistant.
Yeah, see,
and they covered that for a half hour.
If there was a coach that would like take things up a notch.
right there.
Titties out. Is that? Come on, guys. I coach titties out.
That's the new slogan for the WNBA.
WNBA, titties out. Guys, this is one of the most offensive things I've ever said.
Well, it'll be on iTunes in 2 days, motherfucker.
Oh, great.
So.
Yeah. The world will know.
You know what, though? You got to think what other slogans were perused through before they came across.
What's their slogan?
I think it's We Got Next.
Jesus, is it really?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah, well, because the NBA season ends and then they got next.
So, well, maybe that makes sense.
So that's like their whole thing.
Titties out makes a lot more sense.
We're going home.
Yeah.
The WNBA. Come on, watch. Or, hey, put that remote down.
WNBA.
They're all very good.
They are. They're incredible.
WNBA, not just for lesbians anymore. Right?
I don't know if any of them are lesbians.
I don't think any of them are.
There's like three or four NBA players married to WNBA players.
I know.
I want to be agents.
John Stockton
is
married to Cheryl Swoops.
No.
Yep, that's true.
That's
look it up.
True.
Yep,
that's not true.
Jeff Hornacek and Lisa Leslie.
Lisa
had a little fling.
Not married
that's
to Jeff Hornacek.
Look it up.
Spud Webb and Cheryl Miller.
Exactly,
that's happening.
I would like to see that
here's
baby.
Here's the big.
I would like to see
here's
that baby.
Here's the biggest combo that might surprise you.
What?
Benoit Benjamin and Rebecca Lobo.
No. Rebecca Lobo has not been with Benoit
Benjamin.
She
went down on Benoit Benjamin twice in the locker room. Look it up.
I've known Benoit for many years. And never once did he mention an affair with Lisa Lobo. Lost Lobo.
Michael Cage and
I don't know any other
Cheryl
players.
Miller. Again, she
okay,
made the
she gets around.
I saw her at the Mac store 3 weeks ago.
Who?
Cheryl Miller, looking just tall and
really
and Miller-esque.
Yeah,
she's a Hall of Famer.
There you go.
She's unbelievable. You ever see that the
30 for 30?
Unbelievable.
I know.
I always knew she was good, but like
whooped ass.
Yeah, and
she whooped ass.
And
it's like the famous story where like Reggie hit a shot at the buzzer or something, and then like hey, so how Cheryl do tonight? And then Cheryl scored 100 points that night.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, fuck yourself.
Steve Rinazzisi, Renaissance man.
Steve,
do you have stuff you want to plug?
I have a Twitter account. It's at Steve Rinazzisi, RANNAZZISI. And then.
How many Zs are there in
there's two Z's.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there's two Z's, two N's.
Melissa Villasenor and I made up a song about you one
Oh, yeah. She told me a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys were in La Jolla or something, right?
Yeah.
You were writing a song about
it. And then we were at the piano, and Lou was playing, and it was called How Many Z's Are in Rinazzisi?
Did we do La Jolla together that weekend?
Yeah, I was down there with Simone. You came down.
Oh, okay, cool.
I was down there with Simone, remember? And you came down for the place. That was a lot of fun.
There you go.
So I have the Twitter account, and then the league on Thursdays at 10:30 on FX.
Thursdays at 10:30. Now, would I be an asshole if I asked you to do the the Shiva call?
Oh, the Shiva blast?
Yeah,
I can't scream it, but I'll try. I'll back up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We could.
Ready? So
sit there. Here we go.
How do I sound in your earphones?
Good,
great.
Shiva Kamini Samakanda Kram.
He got the name right.
Wow.
I quiz you. You are a professional. You are a gentleman.
Thank you very much.
Steve Rinazzisi, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's a blast.
Appreciate
come back
it.
Anytime. And thanks for making time. And
thank you guys.
You're going to suck my dick now, right?
That's kind of what we agreed on.
It seemed like a natural transition, right? I was like, thanks for coming by. Nervous compliment before you have to blow somebody.
You know,
thanks for being you,
I
man.
Always had a dwarf on my bucket list, so.
we're gonna cross
you're
that
not the
shit
only one.
Tonight.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, now, Brad, real quick, what's the difference between a dwarf blowjob and a...
the view?
One involves her...
one looks up, one looks down. I don't know.
Yeah. What are we doing? Dwarf blowjob in the view?
Yeah, we'll save that for next week.
All right. Well, we'll discuss that. Adam, go.
Adam Ray Comedy. At Adam Ray Comedy for my Twitter. All my videos, adamraytv.com. And screenings of the movie I'm in are starting to happen. So go see that and fill out positive things on the comment card for me.
All right. The movie is called what again?
The Heat.
The Heat. So not the basketball team, but the movie coming out was
No, it's based on it's based on Mike Miller and Alonzo Mourning.
And they
go on a road trip.
Oh, okay. That sounds great.
Yeah.
You have kidney problems on yours in your movie as well?
Okay. Perfect. You follow me on Twitter at FunnyBrad. Visit my website, bradwilliamscomedy.com. Click the Amazon link and buy stuff on Amazon. We will get a portion of whatever you buy, and then we will donate 10% of that to the Friends and Helpers charity, which is the shelter for battered women. Awesome. Thank you guys for listening. Stephen Azizi, thank you for being here.
Titties out.
Watch the league.
Titties out.
You know what?
If this episode blows up, you're going to have to make shirts that say that.
Say titties out.
We're not going to do the normal sign-off line for this show. We're going to say thank you for listening to About Last Night. Titties out.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.